As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, Athletic NBA Show listeners. I'm Andrew Schlecht, and starting this week, the NBA Daily Ding will move to the Athletic NBA Show feed. Monday through Friday, you'll be able to catch up on all of the previous night's action and the time it takes to make coffee. Fancy coffee, delicious coffee. Dave DeFore, myself, Trevon Edwards, Keith Parrish, Jared Weiss, Mo DeKeel, and special guests, and also your favorite Athletic NBA beat writers will break it all down every single morning, and you'll know exactly what went on the night before. Your friends will think that you're a basketball genius, but be sure to tell them why. Be sure to check it out Monday through Friday, the NBA Daily Ding, right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on the Athletic Podcast Network. Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Amick.
To be able to bring people together.
What it do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't know how to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. Here as always with my guys, Anthony Slater out west, Fred Katz out east. Gentlemen, as you know, this season, as we end up trying to peel the onion layers back on the 2021-22 campaign, we're so super team heavy. We're so high profile team heavy that today, on today's pod, we're going to go a little bit deeper and specifically into the east where I know, guys, you know, Brooklyn, Milwaukee dominate the conversation. The Bucks are the reigning champs. The Nets with all things Kyrie, there's still plenty to talk about there. We'll get into that a little bit. But Fred, I'm going to pull you in from your East Coast side, brother, because
Sam, before we pull Fred in, I think me and you should just step off the Zoom and let Fred go like full Colin Cowherd.
Exactly.
Let him go Colin Cowherd
you
on this podcast.
You should be hosting this week, Fred. This is the six degrees
solo host
of Fred Katz podcast. Quick programming reminder, I guess, or, you know, talent reminder. Fred, formerly of the Norman Transcript, Oklahoma City Thunder beat writer, formerly the Washington Wizards beat writer for The Athletic, currently the New York Knicks beat writer. And that checks a lot of boxes on today's pod, Fred, because we're going to talk about the Knicks, the team you cover that is doing some very exciting things. And the folks in the Big Apple are very happy. Bing bong, all of those things. The Wizards, with, by the way, we'll get into it, Bradley Beal not even shooting very well, and they're still winning games, doing good things. The Lakers, because we just kind of have a contractual obligation to talk Lakers, we're going to jump over to the West a little bit, and you covered Russell Westbrook. But
Second segment. Stick with
Slater's got some hot takes, but Fred, to Slater's point, take the steering wheel here, man. Where do you want to start?
Well, we can start with some Billy Donovan schemes in Chicago.
Hey. Yes, more six degrees of cats.
All I think this is further proof that every single major storyline in the NBA somehow goes through Oklahoma City at some point.
Sure.
It's just, well, in every draft pick always, too. It's just always the case. It always goes through this small city in the middle of America. It's incredible. I mean, should we start Knicks? The Knicks are very interesting.
Well, can we start by just saying what the top of the East is as we're speaking? I'm looking at it right now. There are 4 5-1 teams, the Knicks, Wizards, Bulls, and Heat. And there's actually a 5-2 team, which relates to Fred, because he was all about them preseason. The Hornets are 5-2. That's the top.
Disclaimer, we're recording on Monday. A few of these things will change by Tuesday. Yes. But yes, that's how it looks at the moment.
So, Fred, you choose. There's 4 5-1 teams, and they're all related to you. So go
great.
Ahead.
Let's start Knicks. That's the one that I've been watching every single
second. We're talking
Miami,
too, by the way. I just have to, so the Heat fans don't, you know, unplug. We're going to get into Miami a little bit. But okay,
Miami
go ahead,
looks
Fred.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, Miami is defending like crazy. Let's talk Knicks, though, because the Knicks are so interesting. If you go on Cleaning the Glass right now, which runs its, runs its advanced numbers, it eliminates garbage time. But if you go on Cleaning the Glass right now, the Knicks have the best offense in the NBA. They are first in points per possession right now. And
because that's what you
early.
Think about when you think about Tom Thibodeau.
They are 19th in defense. They have transformed both sides of the ball this year from what they were last year. I mean, last year they were, I think it's a little overblown of, hey, the Knicks are back, just because the Knicks were back last year.
Sure.
I mean, they were a 4 seed. Last year, they went 41-31. They were good last year. There were no fans in the building for the majority of the season, obviously. But the Knicks were back last year. It's just crazy to me, at least with this iteration through 6 games, they're shooting a whole bunch of threes, which is something they've made a concerted effort to do coming into the season and something they really didn't do last year. They shot them at a good percentage. They're 24th in the league in three-point attempt rate, just the proportion of their shots that came from beyond the arc. Right now, they're right up in the league leaders in three-point makes, three-point attempts, three-point percentage. Fournier has been ridiculous shooting threes. Kemba Walker and Derrick Rose have both been ridiculous shooting threes. Fournier and Walker specifically, those two additions, like, it's just transformed their offense, I think. They've both been good in different ways, but the way that they are able to attack, play at a higher pace, the offense just looks so different. They move the ball well. They have some crunch time issues. They've let some games get away from them late, but for the most part, they've held on. The offense is just... It's baffling to think that there is a lot of continuity on this team, which struggled a lot offensively last year and seriously struggled in the playoff series against Atlanta.
How much of it's RJ Barrett? To me, just outside looking in, I mean, he seems to have steadily made, you know, mini leap now to an even bigger leap. I mean, I see he's shooting 38% from three. I mean, on a decent volume, over 5 a game. That's huge for them because they've kind of made their name in this jumpstart era with Thibodeau as, like, you know, he's cobbling in veterans. They found Randall. It's all these kind of mismatched guys with you know, I guess a low ceiling that just probably is a first round and out team. But RJ Barrett is the high draft pick that they might have hit on that I think kind of gets slept on a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, he just had a career high 35 points against New Orleans over the weekend. And one thing that Thibodeau kind of alludes to a lot, he never flat out says it to single out Barrett, but at the beginning of the year, you know, because you know how this market is, there were so many questions at the beginning of the year to Tibbs and to Leon Rose in his, you know, season starting press conference, their president, just what is your guy's path to getting another star here? And Tibbs answered that, you know, the 3 or 4 times that he was asked it, he answered it in a very similar way, which is he said, you know, we had no stars coming into last year, and Julius Randle kind of became a star under the Knicks' tutelage, right? I mean, he ends up making All-NBA last year, makes an All-Star team, and has a career season. And Tibbs says every time his emphasis is on developing a star that's already in New York. And I always assume that he's referring to RJ Barrett in that case, because Barrett just improved, you know, number 3 overall pick 2 years ago. He improved so much last year, and he looked so good in the preseason. First 3 games of the regular season, he really got off to a slow start, but his decision-making is better. His shooting is a lot better. I think those shooting numbers are going to hold up. Like, I think he's really going to be a high 30s.
38?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was 40 last year on 4.5 attempts a game, and he looks more comfortable. He's taking them from the wings now. It's not just the corners. Like, he's worked a lot on his shooting mechanics and changed them. Like, I think that's holding up. I think that's real.
That's huge. That's huge.
And defensively, he is legitimately very good now, which is huge for them, because it steps into the shoes of Reggie Bullock and, you know, who ended up leaving and had to take on the tough wing assignments last year. And, you know, he's done a great job against Jason Tatum, against some other wings. That's really big for them, how much he's improved defensively.
Fred, let's go with the macro look a little bit, and I'm hoping to dig in a little deeper on some of those systemic changes that you're kind of highlighting there. You had a good piece the other day, the Knicks 3-point revolution. Is it sustainable? Good read as always. What jumped out at me, I mean, listen, they add Kemba Walker via buyout from the Thunder. They add Evan Fournier, and the shooting obviously is transformed because of it. You had a hell of a stat about how when it comes to pull-up threes, and this is obviously a few days back when you wrote this piece, that in terms of pull-up threes that the incumbents, Elfrid Payton and Reggie Bullock, last year had combined 40 all year long, and that Fournier and Walker were already at 31. But, you know, you mentioned Leon Rose, you mentioned Tibbs, you mentioned the offense completely flipping from last year. I think they were 19th or 22nd, I just looked at it, in offense last year. But where's it coming from? To your knowledge, in terms of this internal dialogue about how they wanted to be different last season, I mean, to be this different, given the success of last season, I think is somewhat surprising. Do you have any clarity on kind of what the thought process was here?
Yeah, and by the way, an update on that stat: through six games, Fournier and Kemba Walker have now taken 48 pull-up threes.
Wow.
So it
so
took
from
them,
31 to 48.
Yeah, it took them six games to take more than the guys who, you know, they replaced, which just shows, I mean, that just shows an unbelievable stylistic change, right? I mean, I think it starts with Tom Thibodeau, to be honest, in terms of that sort of driving that sort of change. I mean, one of the things that I'm really curious to explore, and I don't quite know the answer to, and I would love to learn the answer, you know, Tibbs has been a head coach. This is his 10th season as a head coach. His previous 9 seasons as a head coach, he has never had a team that has finished in the top half of the league in 3-point attempt rate. It's just never happened. He's never had a high volume three. And you know, I asked him about it once. Like, did his philosophy change? Was he always like this and you just did it because of personnel? He basically implied it was the latter, that it was just because of kind of you have to play to your personnel and the strengths of your personnel. But the one thing about that answer is, like, he was in charge of personnel in Minnesota, and he went out and didn't get guys who were high volume 3-point guys. They literally were last in the league in 3-point attempt rate both of those full seasons that he was in Minnesota. So he was in charge of personnel. He could have made that change. So I don't know if something flipped, something adjusted, or I should say, I don't know why something flipped or something adjusted, but clearly it did. He put a very strong emphasis on this, you know, culturally, internally. From before the season even started, I think it had to do with the personnel moves that they made. You know, he was telling guys before training camp even started, they want to take more threes and they want to take more good organic threes, you know, standstill ones within the offense and pull up ones from, you know, the guys who have permission to take pull ups. And now that's like 7 different players in their rotation. You know, something did flip with him, but I'm not totally sure of the reason why. I am fascinated to find it out, though, because it's really interesting. You know, Tibbs is this character who people talk about is inflexible or
right.
stubborn.
That's where
or,
I was gonna
or
go
whatever,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and clearly nobody's ever argued he doesn't prepare, that he, you know, that he doesn't know the game. It's kind of amazing to see a Tibbs team playing this sort of style, yeah. and doing it really successfully.
Can I quickly flip side that? Because, you know, who knows with all these small samples, but what'd you say they were defensively right now?
19th. Like,
yeah, so, you know, there's inevitably going to be a patch of struggles this season, just for any team, but the Knicks at some point will have some struggles. And if that's what they are defensively, if they sacrifice defense for offense, how is he going to handle a rough patch? You know what I mean? Like, he may be behind the scenes right now knowing they're 5-1, but looking at that defensive rating and just sweating, like, what, you know, what, how is he handling the fact that their defensive personnel sounds like it's worse?
Yeah. I mean, look, part of it is that Nerlens Noel has been hurt to start the year, but Taj Gibson's been really good filling in for his minutes.
I mean, Parker and Fournier, obviously, defensively, exactly. That was the concern going in. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Part of it is that. Like, against New Orleans the other night, there were just... They had driving lanes problem, and the transition defense has been lacking at points. I mean, they've struggled in transition, and some of it is just kind of getting back, and maybe that has something to do with them playing a higher pace. But it's not like they're like a, you know, it's not like they're like a top five, you know, high pace team. They're just not the slowest team in the league anymore. So I mean, look, I think what the Knicks' logic was organizationally was we can take a step back in terms of overall defensive talent that we're playing by bringing in Walker and Fournier because they have so much faith in the system that they run and the coaching staff that's leading it. And I don't think that's flawed logic. I think that tends to make sense, especially in the regular season. And you guys saw what Atlanta did to them in the first round last year. They just had such a predictable offense, and Atlanta swarmed Julius Randle, and they were just going ISO against it, and it didn't work. So I think they knew they needed offensive diversity, and they were willing to make that compromise.
Well, and Tim...
It's what the Warriors did. That's what the Warriors did, too, but go ahead.
No, just, you know that Tibbs knew going in. I mean, the Fournier-Walker defensive concerns were front and center. I remember listening to a podcast with our colleague Chris Mannix at SI where, because he's Boston-based, you know, he kind of talked about seeing that front row with the Celtics and how big of a problem it was going to be. If you're Tibbs, you know, what's the most natural way to try to mitigate that a little bit? You got to, you know, let those guys loose on the offensive end, and he obviously is. The Tibbs thing in general I find interesting, Fred, because I told somebody recently that it's a weird parallel to make, but, you know, Chris Paul out in Phoenix, year number two as a leader, year number two as a grinder and a personality that is historically known to be high impact early on in his tenure with certain humans. And then over the course of time, it's a question of, you know, where what's the shelf life? And Tibbs has had the same rap. So to see him evolve like this, to see it be different, and at least early on here, fresh, I think is somewhat of a surprise. Give us, before we jump into the Wizards a little bit, we got to have some of that bing bong spice and color from the city. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to the games, you're seeing the people be excited. We saw after...
What is this bing bong? I keep seeing it on Twitter.
I don't know, like, either.
Can Fred, I get can a explain backstory it. Here? Yes.
Have you seen the video?
Yes, I have no. Seen the video. Whoa.
Is this the video of all the Knicks fans going crazy? I've seen some clips of that just outside Madison Square.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's from the video.
Okay. Well, thank you. There's the backstory.
With the random strays to Tom Brady was my favorite part of the video.
Dude, it's so funny.
But guys,
funny.
That was after the first game, right? That was the first game.
Yeah, they just won a game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an unbelievable game. It was a double overtime game, but they won a game. Knicks fans are insane.
Did the Knicks social accounts, didn't they pump that out? Am I correct? The official ones?
I don't think it was the official Knicks social
account. All right. Well,
it felt like it was probably like a Daisies and Marrow segment.
Right. I didn't know if they endorsed it, though, because my favorite part was so New York that only in New York – can you just say, hey, just forget about the 27 F-bombs in this video. Like, we love it. You know what I mean? The passion. And again, the Tom Brady part was great. But in terms of the people who have suffered in New York for a long time looking for a winner, and last year was exciting for them, just what's the vibe and what are the people saying so far?
It's abject insanity. They're losing their minds. I mean, the crowds are – and look, there are some great crowds in the NBA. And when the Knicks are good, it's just they're right up there with all the other ones, right? Like, they're right up there, Portland, OKC when they're good, Utah, you know, Philly's great.
Did you go as a kid? So you grew up in New York, Fred. Did you go?
Yeah.
Often?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wasn't a Knicks fan. But yeah, I didn't grow
Who
up
was
a Knicks
your team?
Fan. But yeah, I was a Clippers fan growing up.
Clippers, I remember that.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. That's right.
Disappointing.
You're just sitting there taking stats, looking around at Knicks fans like, they're not even that good. Why are you so excited?
They're 17th in offensive
rating. No, because I was a
rating.
Clippers fan, and the Clippers were always worse. I'd go to the Clippers game, the Clippers-Knicks game every
year. All right, well,
year,
you're taking the energy out of the Knicks thing. Let's stick with the Knicks.
No,
what was
Knicks,
it like as a kid? I mean, those, you know, what kind of memories flashback as you sit there now covering this group?
The fan base seems extremely reinvigorated. I mean, they the crowds, even, I mean, they played a crazy preseason game, which in any other context I'd say was an oxymoron, referring to something as a crazy preseason game. But they played a crazy preseason game against the Wizards where they were down 19. The Wizards pulled all their guys because it was the preseason. Tibbs left all the starters in to try to come back because they really wanted to win their final preseason game. They came back down 19, and they won a close game at the end. And the crowd, if you just listen to the crowd in the fourth quarter, like, you would have thought it was game 7 of the NBA Finals. It was insane. It was so loud to the point that, like, scouts who were at that game after the game, instead of just talking about the basketball, which you guys know that's how scouts are, they're just extremely analytical, they were just like, that crowd was the craziest thing I've ever heard. So I think this fan base is so pumped after they made the playoffs last year, and the fact they're off to this really strong start is I think they're going wild. You know, it's game tonight against Toronto. I'm sure it'll be the exact same thing.
So, in other words, just like Wizards home games? Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, good transition. One last thing I wanted to say about the Knicks crowd, though. I always appreciate, they like introduced us back to the NBA crowd post-pandemic. And, you know, I'm not saying we're in a post-pandemic world, but remember that
game one crowd? Yeah.
No, remember that game one crowd with, like, you know, Spike Lee, and it was the Trae Young series. But I just, like, that was awesome. I remember that as like, oh yeah, this is how much better the NBA is when humans are allowed to be in the arena watching it.
No question.
So I just want to say.
All right, so just like Wizards home games, let's dive into your old team, Fred. How many years on the beat?
3 years doing the Wizards.
3 years on the beat, and it was, I mean, listen, the Bradley Beal, Russell Westbrook chapter had some good moments last year, but by and large, during that span of Wizards history, the problem, of course, was that it was, you know, Bradley Beal and the Misfits, and Bradley Beal and the, you know, eternal questions of whether or not he wanted to be there and where they were going. So as we wrote over the offseason, you know, the backstory on Russ leaving was obviously interesting, where Russ wanted to get back to LA. You know, he reaches out, connects with LeBron, goes to LeBron's house, figures things out, you know, talks to Bradley Beal during that process, essentially even before a meeting with the Lakers, had tried to gauge Brad on the idea of him leaving. Brad didn't want to go anywhere. And we know now, of course, that, you know, Brad can opt out next summer, still kind of that question hanging about where his head is at. But this trade, where you, it's a little bit like the Anthony Davis trade with New Orleans, where you took all these Lakers draft picks and you put them on a different team. This one's working out a whole lot better so far than it has for the Pelicans, with, you know, Montrezl Harrell and Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope fitting in wonderfully. Brad, not even off to, you know, a wonderful start shooting-wise. Spencer Dinwiddie has been a really nice addition. They seem deep. David Aldridge, the legend, had a great column the other day talking about Montrez and kind of his energy and his passion and the way that he is kind of vibing with the teams a few hours from where he grew up. Guys, you know, and again, every team right now, we got to give the disclaimer that it's early, but they've had, you know, a lot of good moments and a lot of stuff that looks somewhat sustainable here.
Harrell's been, I mean, he's playing so much better than he has in so long. I mean, they actually have him
2 years. He was a sixth man a couple years ago.
I know.
The Lakers marginalized him because they knew they couldn't use him in the playoffs.
That's true. But he's defending at a level that he hasn't. I'm not saying he's become this world beater defensively. But
he's also, not to, you know, sports psychologist it. That's not a verb, but I made it a verb. DA's column, which I would highly recommend people reading, got into some really interesting stuff psychologically about Montrez and some of his comments supporting Bradley Beal. And his point was, all right, first of all, it's obviously intelligent to attach yourself to the franchise player if you're the new guy, kind of strategically, fine. But that there seemed to be more there. He's had some comments that seem, in my opinion, as, you know, not really all that veiled in the direction of his Clippers experience. And you go back to that experience where, you know, again, Jovan Buha and I at the time wrote about the chemistry problems the Clippers had. And Montrez was always kind of seen as the truth teller in that environment. Remember, he came out publicly during that time and essentially said, you guys should stop talking about us as title contenders. We haven't done anything. And while that played well publicly, privately, he, I think, kind of got put off to the side a little bit. So to see him, you know, I don't think he was a believer in the Stars on that team, and then now singing a different song as it relates to Brad and hitting certain talking points that contrast quite a bit with, you know, again, the Clippers experience, I find fascinating. And if that is all genuine, I think it could make for a fun season.
Yeah, you know, I think Wes Unseld Jr. is doing a really good job there too. They seem like a group. They're playing really hard. They're playing the best defense the Washington Wizards have played since, oh man, I the Randy Whitman years, I guess. I mean, they're
Randy.
Yeah, we're going back to Randy Whitman.
Slater's getting Randy. Easy there, buddy.
They're playing well. I mean, I remember last year, there was about a 2-month stretch where they played good enough defense that they climbed to 20th in the league in points allowed per possession, which is where they finished. And it was like an unbelievable accomplishment that they got out of the bottom 10 and into the bottom 11 defensively. They had just been so, so porous on defense for the previous few years. They were, you know, 27th one year, they were 29th one year, and they got up to 20th to where they were just like kind of acceptable, but still not even league average. And this year, they're playing so much better team defense. I think Denny Avdia looks like he could be a really, really, like, he's becoming a good defender. He's not doing anything offensively right now, but he's becoming a really dependable defender. They're lucky that the Gafford injury, and Gafford's lucky the Gafford injury doesn't seem like it's as bad as it actually looked when it happened, and sounds like he could be back soon. And he's obviously really helpful in that aspect. They're playing better team basketball, and they're deep. Like, they're really deep.
I think that Tommy Shepard deserves credit for the Westbrook trade. Now, I do think that he, you know, in some ways, they stumbled into a fortunate situation where the Lakers seemed like they were going heeled, but then, you know, the last minute flip that seemed very LeBron James driven. But if you think about it, look, Spencer Dinwiddie, who that trade kind of freed them to have the cap space to sign, is, in my opinion, a better offensive co-star next to Bradley Beal. Dinwiddie currently averaging about 20 a game, shooting 40% from three. That's just spacing, more efficiency, less just ball dominant usage. And then through Westbrook, they got their top three guys in minutes played right now: Harrell, Caldwell Pope, and Kuzma. And Kuzma's playing well. Caldwell Pope was playing just really a very well. Steady. Yeah, a very steady player. And then Harrell. So, like, we're talking about their, you know, three of their best players right now they got for Westbrook, who we all kind of agree was kind of a wonky fit. Dinwiddie fits better. Like, you just completely remake your team right there. And again, they're lucky that the Lakers decided on that. But that is
Buddy
why
Hield
they're
is
better.
Out there shooting 44% from three on almost 11 attempts a game. He would have fit in well with the Lakers. The two.
And hey, don't forget, Dinwiddie's part of that Westbrook trade too.
Yeah,
they couldn't
because they had to wrap.
They
it
had
in.
To wrap it in because they couldn't outright sign him. They didn't have cap space, so he's part of that return also.
So two,
like four of their five best players
and,
for Russell
and
Westbrook.
And Aaron Holiday has been good for them too. Like, he's been legitimately helpful.
Two numbers that jump out. Sorry, Freddie. Two numbers that jump out to me, and you mentioned Dinwiddie, Slater, 5.5 assists. You know, from a playmaking standpoint, that's nice. And Kuzma, who I've seen play so much mediocre basketball during his Laker time, to see him, he's up at almost 12 boards a game. I mean, he's competing on both ends of the floor, doing good things. What do you think, Fred, though, the one other name that jumps out, because he got paid a lot of money and he's a hell of a shooter, but and apologies if we have to edit this because I might have missed something, is Bertans hurt right now? No, he's played.
He's playing all six
games. I mean, his role, you know, pretty struggling. Significantly diminished, about 20 minutes a game and not, I think, averaging about 6 points. How do you see that?
I mean, they have a lot of forwards. They haven't had Rui Hachimura, and they haven't had Thomas Bryant, and they still just have a lot of forwards. And look, Kuzma's been starting for them, and KCP's been starting at the three for them, which then, you know, creates another forward who could be a guard, you know. And Kuzma's been playing really well. They're not going to pull him. You know, Unseld is a big Kuzma fan. When they got him, you know, at Summer League, after they got him, I was talking to him, and you know, he was talking to me about how he thinks Kuzma could be a really big difference maker for them. Like, he was really singling him out as a guy who he thought was undervalued. So, you know, I figured that he'd be getting minutes there. they just have a lot of guys at that position, and Bertans is not a defender, and he hasn't been shooting unbelievably. I mean, he's in the mid 30s right now from three, and that's just, you know, he's got to be up over 40 in order to be able to make the difference that, you know, that he's capable of making. He's got to be up over 40. He's got to be taking a ridiculous volume of threes. And he had a slow start last year, and it's kind of happening again this year. I mean, Beal's off to a slow start too. Beal is just not shooting the ball at all. And not only not shooting, but, you know, we've talked so much in the media space about James Harden and how the new foul rules are affecting him getting to the free throw line, even though he had a 19 free throw game the other day. But Bradley Beal seems like he might be really impacted by that as well, because his free throw rate is just about cut in half from what we're used to seeing him at. And that's a big reason why his efficiency stays up. He's a very good free throw drawer. He's very good at getting into the lane, kind of keeping the ball out and baiting defenders, getting a hand in that move that Harden's famous for and going up right when it happens. And, you know, he really hasn't been getting to the line as much either on top of the shooting woes for him.
I know it's early, but you know Tommy Shepard so well. You know kind of where his outlook has been in terms of the construction of this roster. If Bertans' role continues like this, there's part of me that says, you know, I could see him being a guy that gets talked about at the deadline. You give a guy that much money and he's got that shooting skill that is so coveted. What do you think?
Maybe. I don't know. I think it depends on what his value is around the league. Like, I don't think the Wizards are going to attach anything to Bertans in order to get rid of him. Like, I don't think... I would be surprised if they did something like that. I think it would have to be a trade.
I can't see him staying happy if he just doesn't fit into what Wes is doing.
Well, you know what? Give me that money. I'll be thrilled.
Yeah.
You can play me however you want.
You got that Athletic Knicks money.
Tell Davis to go over to Montrez and say, I should be getting your minutes, Montrez. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Harrell's averaging 20 and 10. And, you know, Thomas Bryant's not even back yet. Like, I'm so curious to see.
And Hachimura, too, like you said.
Yeah. Like, I'm so curious to see what happens specifically when Bryant comes back, because one thing they still need 3-point shooting, and Bryant has been out ever since he tore his ACL in January, and he could be back in a month, maybe a little more. And once he's back, like, he's not just a center who's back in the rotation. He's one of their better 3-point shooters, and they have not been good from three. Harrell's been playing great. They just paid Gafford, who is really important for them defensively and is a lob finisher and all that. And that center rotation is going to be really interesting with Harrell playing so well, because I think Bryant is important for them as a shooter, just as he is as a big. And he and Harrell are kind of similar types of players. They have a lot of, not all, but a lot of overlapping skills. So just as kind of pick and roll guys and more offensive slanted than defensive slanted centers. And that is going to be interesting to see how it sorts out. Slater, you think they're real? Like, I you know, not best in the East, but, like, you know, people talked about them as maybe on the fringe of the play-in tournament, right? Like, is this a team that you think could finish in, like, the top eight again?
Yeah, because I really do think Montrezl Harrell was undervalued as a regular season player. I think too much last year, Frank Vogel, I think understandably too, but they'd be playing, you know, playoff team X in the West, and Montrezl Harrell would have one defensive breakdown. And in Vogel's mind, it's like, can't play that in the West Finals. Like, yank him out of the game. Look at his minutes. I mean, he just, like, they turned him into basically a non-factor last year. And Kuzma, pretty similarly. I mean, Kuzma's flashed some stuff in his career, and it just wasn't shown the last few years. And I just think they needed a new situation. And they needed the opportunity they're getting, and I did think they were these type of players, and to me that bumps up the depth. It bumps guys like Bertans down to where he probably should be in a rotation, and again, Dinwiddie fits better than Beal next to Westbrook. And this team, you know, finished up in the play-in last year very flawed, and I just think they're a lot deeper and they just make more sense. And Beal will get hot at some point, I'm sure. So, well, the East is crowded, but yeah, I mean, I don't see why they can't be in the 5, 6, 7, 8 type range.
It's crazy to watch them defend and not foul everyone all the time. That's a wild one to me, because they had such fouling problems the last few years, and to watch them defend and not really foul. Look, when Wes Unseld Jr. got hired, the reviews on him were crazy. I mean, I had so many people, I spoke to so many people who had worked with him in different capacities, and I just, it's not even like I didn't hear a bad word. It was like every person I spoke to was just raving about how great of a hire it was. And you know, it sounds like, you know, I spoke to some people there recently, and like people there are talking just about his preparation, like just how he is a relentless preparer and worker. And that was the reputation that he had in Denver too. And I think it's coming through in the way that they're scheming, the way that their defense looks. Like, the message seems to be getting across. Like, they, good signs for them.
Guys, we are going to take a quick break, but to lay out the back end of the pod here, we're not getting too far from the East. We still got to hit on Chicago. We're going to briefly hit on Miami. I think I might make an executive decision and break our contractual obligation to talk Lakers. That might be for next week. But Anthony Slater has got some things on his mind. He's got a rant coming up. You hear rants everywhere these days in the media, but not a Slater rant. He's got something organic that he came at us with this morning. Slater, can you give us a teaser here?
Yeah, we've dipped into the topic a little bit already in this podcast, but it will have to do with the new rules that are being legislated league-wide. And I think we all probably have some opinions on it. And I want to make this a weekly segment, not necessarily a weekly Slater rant, unless that's what you guys want, but somebody's bringing something to the table every week to really dive into as a topic group.
I like it. I like it. All right, that's on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, we are back, gentlemen. A little bit more East to talk about, but Slater's got some thoughts. Slater's got thoughts. I can see the eyes getting wider, the smile coming out. What do you got, man?
Draymond the other night did something that you will very rarely see Draymond Green do. He, in his postgame, unprompted, complimented the referee. He was like, referees are doing a great job right now. And you know, he also mentioned how much better it is to watch basketball this season. And we'll see if you guys agree. He's obviously a defense first guy, yeah. But I would agree with him generally that the numbers got artificial the last few years. They blew up to an unreasonable degree. I mean, if you go back to the first Durant Warrior season, which is what we all were like, is this the greatest offense ever created? They had a 114.8 rating. They were the best ever, the rating that year. Every year since, it's been the best. You know, remember the Mavericks a couple years ago were the best rating ever? That Warriors team last season would have been the eighth best offense ever, the Durant Warriors, behind like Nets, Blazers, Clippers, Jazz, Bucks, Nuggets, Suns. It's just gone mad. And I don't know if these foul calls or non-foul calls, I should say, the way Harden's not getting away with it. Fred mentioned Beal, Trae Young, even with the Warriors, they're talking about Steph Curry. You know, he tried to pump and jump into a guy in Portland, didn't get called, yelled at the ref for a while. And then now they're saying, they're already seeing it in Steph's game where he's doing the pump and he's like, should I jump? And he's like, no, I'm passing it off. And it just keeps the game going, flowing. Obviously, it helps the defense a little bit. But I just like what I'm seeing league-wide. And the numbers, I don't know, you know, how tied together they are, but there's now right now six teams with a defensive rating under 100. You know what the league leader in defensive rating was last year? The Lakers at 106.8. That would currently be 18th in the league right now. And if you go back to not long ago, 2015-16, 106.8 would have been 19th. We just got crazy the last 5 years, and I understand that it's pace and space, it's threes, it's just the new era, but I think that some of the, you know, the autonomy they've given referees to just kind of cut the bullshit out, I think has really helped. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I agree with Draymond. I'm enjoying the product a lot more this season.
No, I would
Slater
agree.
Slater was the one who went Cowherd there.
Yeah, I know. That was good.
That was perfect. Give him his own solo show.
That was no. You guys, one of you two is bringing a rant next week.
No, I'm with you. It is fun to watch from a competitiveness standpoint, especially I guarantee you the fans are enjoying watching the stars struggle. and have to fight through this. You know what I mean? Not trying to take away from the beauty of what they do, but that idea, because so many fans get turned off by the star calls, like the Kings the other night, for example, because of where I live. I have friends who are Kings fans. I got a buddy, shout out Josh Ellis, my guy, I love you. He sends me a note when the Kings were, I think, playing Phoenix, and it was like, man, it's so obvious that, you know, that the stars get the calls, and he was just mad they were losing. And that's the narrative. That's how fans feel. And to see some of these guys have to fight through, not get the whistle, and to have, you know, a little slice of that 80s kind of ruggedness, I'm okay with. Draymond is the imperfect messenger, right? Like the idea that Draymond, you know.
No, never.
I thought you were going to finish the sentence with, man, the refs are doing great. I punched the guy in the face. He didn't say anything. It was amazing, you know. But I think his point is for sure well taken.
I think the players probably like it as much as we do. Like,
most of them.
Yeah.
If you're not James Harden or Trae Young right now, basically.
Right, for sure. You know, save for 5 to 10 players, I think everybody else is happy with it. Look, I've had conversations with players, not interviews, just like, you know, just chatting in a locker room and talking hoops and talking about the previous night's games or whatever throughout the years. And you know, Harden comes up or someone else comes up and players don't demean his game. They realize how great he is, but players complain about the way he plays.
Oh,
they
sure.
They think it's BS. I'm sure you guys have had similar conversations with guys, and they.
Steve Kerr has no opinions about this at all.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people who think it's just a crappy way to play. And look, Stephen Bondi from the New York Daily News asked Evan Fournier. He did a story on how the new foul rules can help the Knicks, you know, play more physical defense, which is true. And he asked Evan Fournier if he likes the new rules. And Fournier's two-word answer was, I don't know if I, you know, I'm going to say it on the podcast. I'll give Andrew some extra homework. Fournier's two-word answer was, fuck yes. So, so I think the players are pretty emphatic about liking this.
I think it's created just healthier, I don't know, coverage of the league. But, you know, we're talking Davion Mitchell and Evan Mobley and the way they've injected some defensive life. And I just, you know, it just seems like a more pure game that, you know, the defense does have a little advantages now in small ways. And I just, from somebody who actually, you know, I really want to watch the game, I've enjoyed really watching the game.
No, I like it. I mean, to your point about the wing defenders, I hadn't connected those dots, right? The idea that the conversation is honing in more on guys like that because of the impact they're having, the impact they're allowed to have. So I like it. I hope it keeps up. I'm curious to see, you know, where the competition committee goes as they kind of analyze this thing all the way through the year. But good take, Slater. Freddie, got anything on the back end of that before we dive back into the East?
I got nothing.
You got more East talk. All right. 6 degrees of Cats continues here as we dive into what do you've got a Bulls tie-in. We got Billy Donovan, coach of the Bulls, formerly coach of the Thunder.
We got Bulls, we got Heat. I mean, the Heat are real interesting.
I know. Let's Bulls, do though? Bulls real quick.
Bulls are really interesting.
This was too. Not by design, but we have a little bit of a structure here. The making our way down the three-pointers attempted per game list, you know, among the East surprise teams because, you know, whereas we talked about the Knicks kind of transformation on that end, we got into the Wizards, who are a little bit farther down that list. The Bulls are coming at you with DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, you know, Lonzo Ball pushing the pace, but a lot of mid-range. I think they're last in the league in three-pointers attempted. Looking right now, that is the case. They're attacking, they're playing defense, they are deep, and they are, after being one of the most controversial offseason teams to analyze, they are so far looking pretty good. What do you guys think?
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back
We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Chase Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
DeMar DeRozan's defensive rating, when or the Bulls' defensive rating when DeMar DeRozan's on the floor right now, is 92.2.
Man.
Yeah. They're the best, sixth-best defense right now. We're the sixth-best defense in basketball. I'm not saying it's DeRozan who's doing it necessarily, but they're certainly surviving his minutes. And that was the concern coming in. And again, I think with all these teams, we need to look at schedule and the six teams they've played to get to 5-1. The Bulls started with like Pistons,
yeah,
I think.
For sure.
New Orleans thrown in there. So, you know, there's a soft opening. It's now getting harder. They just beat Utah.
No Mike Conley, but yes, they did beat Utah.
Yeah. And so, you know, so we'll see. Their schedule really hardens over the next couple weeks. We'll see a
14,
lot more. But
according to our esteemed Bulls beat writer, Darnell Mayberry, this jumped out at me too. 14 consecutive games against teams that were in the postseason last year. So we're about to see what they're made of.
We are for sure. But, and Fred can get into this probably a little bit more, but I think Billy Donovan's never had a defense that's ranked lower than like 12th. He's kind of historically, since he's entered the league, been a good defensive coach, scheming up to at least have, you know, an above average defense. And that was, they're relying on him to be able to do that this season. He has. And I think, you know, as we do 6 degrees of Lakers, maybe we'll call it, Caruso has been huge for them. And even Lonzo Ball, and the fact that he'll play those two together a lot. Like, that's a really good defensive pairing in the backcourt. And I think that was maybe a little bit undervalued.
Yeah. So one thing that worries me about them, so I was a little concerned about their depth coming into the year to begin with. Now they lose Patrick Williams, which is such a shame. And Slater, I'll take your DeRozan defensive rating stat a little farther, because it wasn't just DeRozan that we all were worried about with them defensively, right? It was that their three best players, DeRozan, Vucevic, and LaVine, all of them slant offense first to some degree, to varying degrees, I should say, right? And when those three are on the floor, those three are playing a little bit more than 20 minutes a game together. And when those three are all on the floor together, 92 defensive rating. So,
Billy.
A ridiculous number. I mean, that's a ridiculous number. And part of that is because of the easy schedule. I think part of that is that Patrick Williams has been good for them. You look at the other two guys who are playing with them the most, and it's either Williams and Ball or Ball and Caruso. And now it's probably going to be Ball and Caruso a lot. Those two guys are so good at the top of the defense. I mean, they have been so feisty defensively at the top of their defense. It is such a pleasure to watch.
And I mentioned like increased coverage of defense. I feel like I'm seeing league wide because of the freedom of you know, movement for the defense essentially. But every time I see somebody like, you know, looking at the Bulls, it's like, wow, watch this Alex Caruso defensive possession. He's just hounding some ball handler for like 23 seconds. Lakers could probably use that too, don't you think, Sam?
I do indeed. Yeah, I wrote about that in the offseason. Laker Nation was not happy that he was not back. There's nuance here, but Alex, right out the gate, was seemingly surprised the Lakers didn't make a harder push to keep him. You know, the Lakers claimed that his side essentially said, you know, unless you're meeting this Bulls offer, don't even bother countering. And they didn't. So they lost him, and they were in the tax. And Alex was, you know, is one of those contracts that was going to cost him, obviously, a hell of a lot more than what he was getting paid. And it's a tough call, though, because he would be fitting in nicely right now as they give minutes to, you know, Austin Reeves and guys like that. Slater, as an aside, because I love the defensive theme you're bringing to this pod. You're giving me story ideas as we sit here talking, but nice little Gary Payton the second clip the other day. I loved, I mean, it's kind of like you said, he on the Warriors, you got a guy getting steals at the end of every quarter, and Slater is going viral with little videos about it, but we do have a defensive theme to this season.
Yeah, the mitten is what people love to call him, although I've heard he likes baby gloves.
Is the birth name, I forget, the second or junior?
It's the second. It's Gary Payton the second.
I love Gary Payton the second. I love watching him defend.
He can really defend.
He is an incredible defender. He is amazing.
Well, what was the number, Slater? He was 3 out of 6 times that Kerr had put him.
No, 3 times this season in six games. At the end of a quarter, it's, you know, it's like calling the lefty reliever in to face a lefty. Steve Kerr when it's a ball out of bounds, it's one defensive possession left to end the quarter. He'll just, you know, a cold Gary Payton, hasn't played yet in the game, bring him off the bench just for the final defensive possession. 3 times so far this season, and all 3 possessions he's stolen the ball from the other team.
Right.
Which is like, you know, it's like if you look at his stats, it's like 7 seconds against the Lakers on opening night, 1 steal. And then he did it against the Kings when we
defensive
were in Sacramento.
PER,
and then the other night.
If that was a thing. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. But he's actually now, because of this, moved himself into the rotation a bit. And like in Sacramento, he was really good at that game we were at, Sam. And anyway, I didn't know.
Your Twitter game is so strong. Rotation. I had to give you a shout out.
There are like 3 or 4 guys in the league who every year I'm just like, I wish that guy, if he were in a different situation, I would love to see
Lou Dort
getting
on a contender
minutes.
Lou Dort,
you know,
yeah,
and like Gary Payton the second has bounced around. He's always, I mean, you know, I covered him in Washington. He was unbelievable defensively for them, and I've just been like waiting for him to find a spot. He was one of those guys. Javon Carter was always one of those guys. I felt like, man, he deserves rotation minutes, and now he's been good in Brooklyn. Now I'm just waiting for Shaq Harrison to get in somewhere and do the same thing, and then we'll be good to go.
Guys, let's finish the Bulls talk real quick. My final thought there would be, like we said, we're going to see where they take it. They got a really tough schedule ahead. The LaVine thing, just macro outlook real quick, is a pretty unique situation where you got a guy who they were building around, a guy who did not get an extension done in the offseason, you know, said kind of a thing that guys who don't get extensions say, which is, I want my respect. And so the premise is like, all right, did you not get, you know, I don't know what was on the table. Did you not get your respect? But now if they're a good team, if they're a playoff team, and Zach's going to be, to this point, I don't have it in front of me, I think the biggest name free agency wise next year, you know, that is going to be fascinating to see. Do you leave a good situation? Do you just go ahead and stick around? I mean, that it's not hanging over them in the kind of way that other free agency situations have in the past, but it is an interesting one.
It's for them, feels like it, you know.
But there's not like the negativity. You know what I mean? Like there's times when it's, there's a.
Well, there's less of like a league-wide or particularly national media-wise. They're not just going to descend on Chicago for the decision, Zach LaVine. Yeah, maybe you should. But it is huge, and I do think he's probably the most obtainable big-name free agent potentially this summer, and they need to have a good season, I think, to convince him for sure to stay. And also what they really need to do is go max on 100%. The table.
Vlade Divac, by the way, I don't know why I pronounced his name incorrectly there. Vlade Divac, you know, giving Zach that contract years ago. Remember that was the Kings restricted free agency pursuit.
And everybody killed the Kings for that offer sheet.
And it turned
out
pretty well.
And then everybody killed the Bulls for matching the offer sheet.
My guy Nick Friedell even got into it. Yeah,
he
did. Twitter back and forth.
There was
an
in-person back and forth that I saw myself at Summer League. It wasn't hostile by any means, but Nick said hello to Zach, said congrats, and you know, Zach made sure that he knew that he heard a few things that Nick had to say. So, yeah, Zach, he's been worth that contract, and now, you know, he obviously is trying to figure out where his next one's going to come from.
Props to him. He's gotten so much better.
Yeah, for sure.
Clearly he's worked like crazy because he is so much better now than he was 4 years ago.
All right. I don't think we have a 6 degrees of cats element to the Heat, but I can tell that Fred is excited to get into them regardless of that. What do you think, Fred? You got the Lowry addition, Jimmy Buckets doing his thing, you know, PJ Tucker coming over from the Bucks, which was a little Alex Caruso-ish in terms of a contender's fan base being disappointed to lose a role player. They are defending their asses off. They're obviously tough. We knew that was going to be the case. And you got a guy who is always in the conversation for best coach in the league with Eric Spoelstra making good use of these veterans. Heat thoughts.
I think they're awesome. Like, I think they're...
like, champion awesome.
I think they're the best.
Like, Eastern Conference finals awesome.
I think they're the best team that we've spoken about today.
Okay.
Like, they are...
I mean... what you're saying, though, us saying they're better than the Bulls,
the Knicks, and
Wizards is not that.
I think they're.
We've mentioned Brooklyn
and
Milwaukee.
At least the third best team in the East. I think they're at least the third best team in the East, and it would surprise me not at all if they made the Eastern Conference Finals.
How about NBA Finals?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not. I wouldn't say that.
How about this? I'll drop in quick. I had somebody who, you know, is relatively prominent in the league say after they watched Heat Steve Nets. No.
I'm just keeping it consistent.
After they watched Heat Nets, said that the Heat are their pick to come out of the East because somewhat of these rules we're talking about. The way, you know, talk about a team that can now play more physical defensively.
Good timing.
Although Kyle Lowry is usually a benefit of some of the, you know, floppy type offensive stuff. But, you know, Butler defending, Lowry defending, Adebayo, the way they can kind of lock you up. And if they're allowed to, I mean, that was the game where there was probably seven viral Harden clips where Harden, like, can't really get in anywhere on the perimeter. And then he's like, trying to jump into somebody and the refs are just sitting there going, nope. And then it's the Heat the other way. So anyway, if like they theoretically have just an outrageous defense.
I mean, look, on top of that, I mean, where Jimmy Butler has been extraordinary to start the season. But other than kind of him at the top, there have actually been a lot of guys who haven't even been playing up to standards. Like Lowry has struggled, right? I mean, he's really struggled for them. And Duncan Robinson is not shooting the ball like Duncan Robinson. Those two things are going to change. I mean, those guys are going to play better than they've already played. The question about them coming into the year was their depth going to sustain them through the regular season? Tyler Hero clearly got a lot better. I mean, I think a lot of people, he just sort of maintained from year one to year two. I think people talked about him like he declined,
didn't he? I mean, I guess I'm a little stuck on his playoff performance where he took it to a new
level.
Right,
maybe he declined compared to his bubble performance.
Infamous wink and, yes, finals run.
Exactly. But compared to just how he played as a regular season, I don't know, maybe he was a little bit worse. But he people talked about him like, oh, no, it's done. We jumped the gun on him. Right. It's over. I mean, he's 22 years old. And he's been incredible.
And he leads the NBA in bench points. He's number one with 132 bench points. Do you guys know who number two is? Not quite as young as Tyler Hero would be my hint.
Dead silence.
Is it Harrell?
Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, Melo's playing.
Carmelo
well.
Anthony.
Like 53% from three, man.
Carmelo
he's
Anthony,
in the
number two in the league right now. And number three, a should-be Laker, Buddy
Fred,
Hield.
Since we were, I think we've talked about this before, I think we were both in the room when Melo said he wasn't coming off the bench when our guy Eric Horn asked about it. You were there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be pretty rich to have Mr. I Ain't No Six Man win Six Man of the Year. That'd be full circle.
Yes.
That'd be great. He's been killing it for them. But
as the Athletic send Eric Horn to the Sixth Man of the Year press conference, please?
Ask him if he's willing to come off the bench again. Have Paul
Carmelo,
George.
How good of a decision do you think it is that you finally accept it eventually?
Paul George will be in the city.
AP,
just have Paul George
AP,
be in
I
the
want
back.
Sixth Man of the Year, yeah. P. So back
AP, I came off the bench.
Back to the Heat.
Tyler Hero, 22 a game.
Yep.
He's 22 a game. He's 46 from the field, 40 from three on seven attempts from three, shooting 50% on twos. I mean, he's got 54% effective field goal percentage. He's been scoring in bunches. He's actually playing point guard for them. I mean, that's the other part of this. It's not just that he's scoring. He is leading that offense for large portions of the game because they didn't really have the guy who would be your conventional backup point guard, and he's been doing it for them. He's just been excelling in that role. They have so many guys who can create for others with him, Jimmy, Bam, Lowry, like that team. And defensively, like Slater said, I mean, they are all over the place. They have been playing great basketball. I think they are really, really good.
Our small sample size theater, they again, as of Monday's recording, overtook Utah in net rating, tops in the league. And, you know, guys, we always end up paying attention to the top five teams that are top five in offensive and defensive rating are typically title contenders. The Heat coming in number one defensively and fourth in offense. So off to a great start. To Slater's point, the timing couldn't be better. The idea that the rules change comes when they got a bunch of dudes who get after it like they do. And with that, I think, guys, we're going to call it another episode of the Tampering Pod. Slater's got to get off to Warriors practice. Fred, I'm sure, is busy. I got stuff to do. Appreciate you guys. This was, excuse me, for those West Coasters, Slater and I on this thing, this is the most East heavy we've ever been, but fantastic stuff. Appreciate you all. And Fred, you know, next week we'll get into the more teams that you have 6 degrees of cats over. But thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
The Boston Celtics, yes, is his former beat.
All right. Be good. Talk. Thanks, guys. You.